Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics, such as
Thelma and Louise, the ultimate couple that, you know, it doesn't matter if it wasn't like a canon like thing with sex, you know what I mean? Like, they were still this very like connected two women who basically said fuck you to all of the patriarchy, fuck you to all of men, and said, we have got each other and I'd rather die with you than live one more second in this stupid ass society. And honestly, sometimes same.
Hashtag all of 2K19 mood.
Yeah, I mean, for me it's more like by all of humanity, even women, for 2019, but I totally feel that. Yeah.
Yes, I hope they all get on that same level, because that's lit.
What up, cabrona?
What's poppin', chingona? What's goody? What's up, 2K19?
I know this is like the second or third episode of the year already, but happy 2019. I'm Maite, the chingona.
Yeah, I'm Fred Papita, the cabrona. What's good?
And man, it's a new year already. Everything that's come out so far as I was recorded in 2018, so this is the first thing that we record in 2019, which is interesting. It's just an introduction, actually.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, we have content for a while, but hey, what's up, y'all?
So do you want to let the listeners know what we're introducing? Because our episode today is a little unique.
Yes. Well, we're introducing today. It was really awesome talking with him. We spoke with Armando from UndocuTales, and it was fucking amazing. It was such a good vibe, and I'm so excited for upcoming season 3 of UndocuTales. It's out on YouTube, the first 2 seasons, you guys. It's amazing, and I fucking love it. It's everything we stan.
Yeah, this summer is season 3, and I will say, if you guys end up following Armando and his web series Undocumented Tales on YouTube and on the internet, you'll maybe see, if you're LA local, if you can audition for this upcoming season. So check that stuff out. You'll hear much more in the interview. We won't get into it. Let's first talk about 2019 thus far, resolutions. What do you want from this year? How's it so far?
Oh my god, I mean, so far it's actually been like okay, so I've been so boring in 2019. Like, I've bought sabanas and like a comforter and stayed in on a Saturday night and played Golden Girls games. So honestly, I think I'm finding like some kind of medium peace, you know? Like, my resolution for 2019 is just to like center myself more and like try to get away from the internet. Actually, I'm trying to actually just stay away because it's so fucking toxic, and read more books. That's it. What about you?
My main goal is to write a lot more scripts and to get representation, which is not the usual representation that we talked about here on podcast.
Like a rep.
I wanted, yeah, an agent, which would be really cool. It's actually a really tough goal that I'm setting for myself. Like, I would not be surprised if I don't get it. It's a very difficult thing to do, but that is my goal, and I'm setting it, and I don't care if it's super difficult. I'm gonna try my best. It might mean cutting out a lot of my social parts and maybe hopefully prioritizing even things like this, like the podcast, a little less. I know it's gonna be really difficult, but that's my goal.
So I mean, you have a whole year, so you can do it.
A year is nothing to me anymore. I'm getting so old that it means nothing, but I'm gonna try my best.
I don't know, I feel like even we met our goals for like our podcast within a year, and we didn't see, I mean, it didn't feel that likely when we started, so I feel like it's possible. You can do it.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess, you know, that's actually a good example, because I put like everything in, like, that I could into this podcast. I made it my priority. I did, you know, we both worked pretty hard. So, you know, maybe if I put that energy into actually being a screenwriter, then I'll get somewhere. So fingers crossed. Yeah.
Maybe editing in the future, we can put to someone else so that you can have more free time.
So I feel like that's not gonna happen.
Like, oh, okay, well, see, that's the thing, you have to like find your balance and be like,
yeah, okay. I mean, I think that there's other ways that I can take some of the responsibilities off my plate, but honestly, it might just end up being, I don't know, I'm gonna have to strategize that, I'm gonna have to discuss that, I'm gonna have to see about that. But I think
you can see, like, you're already having like,
I'm already like, I just
letting go. You gotta do it, you gotta do it. I'm having trouble
with it. It's just that I, you know, you can only sacrifice so much, but well, I think that there's other things that I'm gonna have to sacrifice on, and I think that's fine. Like, I'm totally willing to sacrifice in other areas. So
see, that's another thing. I was reading this article about how like millennials are just like completely burnt out because we feel that if we're not working every month, like during our free time, that we feel like we're wasting our time and we feel guilty about it. And I feel like that's what you're maybe experiencing, is that like you're already burnt out and then you have to add another thing on to the things that you have to do.
I mean, and it's like possible,
really interesting. Like, it's really interesting.
I think,
like,
I was burnt out last year, though. I think that last year, like this was the only thing that I was really doing, and I was burnt out, and it's kind of like, now I'm more like I'm feeling like a snake. I'm feeling like I'm shedding this old skin, and I'm doing something else.
No, you should. You should shed the skin, but you just got yourself a Slytherin.
Fuck it. I used to be a Hufflepuff, now I got a Slytherin, you know. If I have to be a dick, I mean, then so be it. It's not who I am, but, you know, sacrifices.
Yeah, I mean, just find a way to like find some kind of balance. But I mean, that's hard. It's easy to say and hard to do, but it's true. Like, I feel like most millennials are just like completely burned out. Like, we feel that all of our free time we're meant to be working and optimizing to do something to meet our goals so that we can make more money, so we can be successful. And for what? Like, honestly, for what?
I woke up yesterday and redid my resume and sent out like a dozen applications. That's what I did when I woke up on a Saturday morning.
Yeah.
So I'm
You should go for like a walk sometimes. Yeah, you should go for like a walk sometimes and just kind of like breathe air and just be like, oh, I'm not thinking about anything for like 20 minutes.
In LA?
Yeah, I know. So that's smog.
Anyways. But I'm super excited for you guys to listen to this episode. Armando is like such a kind guy, and he's done so much, and he has the spirit like that. Honestly, maybe I need to start. That's what I need to do, is go hang out with Armando, because this dude like is such a hard worker, and he's always writing, and he's always pushing his project forward. And he's lucky enough that his project is also like kind of his, what he wants to do in his career. And that's amazing. So maybe I need to go follow in some little Armando's.
Yeah, go get inspired. Yeah, go find your inspiration.
Literally, like this podcast, maybe once I re-listen to it, because I remember being so inspired by this guy. So maybe once I edit this tomorrow, I will be revamped again and get started. So,
yes. Enjoy, guys. And shout out all the creatives out there making their own shit happen. Super proud of y'all.
Yeah, I'm excited for Armando in 2019. I know he's going to do great things.
Yes, so hype, so hype.
I'm really good at pretending to be a lesbian.
Oh, I wonder why. Yeah, I wonder why.
We are here in Molcajete Dominguero Studios. Thank you to Luis. And we are here with Armando Ibanez from Undocumented Tales.
Thank you for having me here. I'm very excited.
We're excited.
We're honored.
We've been talking about it. We were binging your like series again.
Yeah, it's so good.
I was telling a friend like a year ago, I told him like, oh, I wish I could be in that podcast. So,
really?
Yes,
when
really? You said without, yes, I did.
Do you remember when we met?
I believe that it was, you went out with one of my friends.
We saw each other in downtown.
I put you on the spot because I think you were drunk.
I was drunk as shit. Absolutely. We went to karaoke.
Your friends, everyone was like, yeah, you were drunk.
Yeah.
We met there, and wow. I was like, oh, I need to do
To Cabrones y Chingonas. I was tripping out because like Julio was so excited to go and see you, and we're like, okay, let's go. And we met you, and I was like, hi, I'm Maite. Like, I have a podcast, blah blah blah. Or that's how me and Julio had met. and you're like, I listen. And I was like, fuck. Yes.
Oh my God.
I was, and then you told me that you were Undocumented Tales, and I was like, I know Undocumented Tales. Like, we followed each other already.
And before that, I was telling a friend, like, oh, I love to do that podcast because they do talk about media and
geisha. Yeah. Geisha.
That's what we usually do.
That's amazing. I loved meeting you that night. I was so happy about it. I was so, like,
I'm excited. Oh my God.
I'm also excited. Yes, there's a lot to cover. I think that your story, and I don't even know that much of it, I think it's interesting as hell.
Yes.
For sure.
Feel free to ask anything.
Yeah, so Armando. tell us about your upbringing. Like, where did you grow up? Anything, any traumas that affected you?
Well, I was queer.
Okay, yeah. There's quite a bit there.
Let me tell you.
Like a fun 5-hour episode.
This is part one.
I'm from Acapulco, Guerrero. I was born in Ensenada, and then we moved with my family when I was like 1 or 2 years old to Acapulco. So I always say that I am from Acapulco.
Gotcha.
And I grew up in the city, but I grew up in the segregated area where all the working class people live. Because usually people always tell me like, oh my God, what are you doing here if you're from Acapulco? But they don't know that if we're here is because like we didn't live us in the touristic area where all the rich and tourist people live. So because I grew up with my single mom and mostly always with my uncles, aunts, grandmas, I grew up in a very machista family. Like, I felt like here and then I was like a very feminine boy, but because we always had an uncle who's like, no hagas eso, no digas así, no te rías así, pareces puto.
Oh,
it's the word in Guerrero.
Right.
Puto is a word. So I grew up listening to that, and because of that, I feel like for me it was like normal to deny any emotions or identity that I wanted. So that's how I spent my entire first 18 years old, my childhood and my adolescence. Like, I never considered like to embrace my identity at all. I didn't have role models, not even on TV, on media, I didn't have anything. The only thing that I had was a very conservative, religious, machista family that didn't let me embrace my queerness. And I remember that I knew it was wrong. I knew it was wrong to be queer. I knew it. In my mind, it was correct. It was incorrect. And I remember I always felt embarrassed. Even like, there's something in the voice. I always talk to my friends, like when we're pretending, we always try to make this masculine voice. And I always know how to live with that. And when I was like around 12, 13, I remember kids were calling me Juan Gabriel. And that hurt me so much because I felt like I was bullied. And I was so embarrassed, and now that I'm like so queer, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so glad that they call me.
You're like, oh, thank you,
right?
But I never considered to come out. And when I was 18 years old, I came to this country, and I had a very lonely life, because when I came to this country, people told me like the only thing that you're gonna do in this country is work and work and work, and if you have any goals, forget about them. And I accepted that, I didn't question it, and I started working in the restaurant industry. McDonald's was my first job, and then like so many restaurants until now. That was 18 years old. And up to now I have worked in more than 20 restaurants. And I feel like I spent most of my 20s very lonely because I didn't want to embrace my identity. And on top of that, I'm still undocumented, but I kept lying to my family, I kept lying to myself, and then I kept lying to society about my legal status. So for me, it was very depressing. It was until I started seeing undocumented youth, protesters on the streets. It was the movement of the Dreamers in 2011, 2012. That I was like, who the fuck are they? Like, I
so empowering.
And I started joining the undocumented movement, and I realized that many of them were yelling queer and unashamed, and they identify as queer, which it was a new word to me. gay, lesbians, trans, so many people from the undocumented activist movement were part of the LGBTQ. And that was, I was already 31 years old, and that was the first time that I started thinking, what if? Mm. What if? And that was, because in my mind, I thought I was going to die in the closet.
Wow.
And it's really sad. It's really sad because it's many tough. People...
A lot of people don't get out. A lot of people don't, like, we have a certain privilege, especially me and Cynthia right now, like, we have a certain privilege where, like, we knew, like, at some point, like, we'd be fine.
Yeah, we knew we'd be fine.
Yeah. In many cases, many people don't have
that support system,
courage, or because society, you know? And for me, I feel like the undocumented queer community were the ones who opened my eyes. But in Mexico, I feel like had I stayed in Mexico, my life would have been different. I would probably still be in the closet. And that's why I'm always thankful with the undocumented queer community. One of my mentors is Julio Salgado.
Shout out to Julio.
Shout out.
Love your Jenny Rivera drag.
all the queers, but because I had all of this Mexican family, I was denying my identity.
That's interesting. Have you told your the rest of your family or any of your family?
You know, I came out to my mom, like around 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then I never came out
to anyone else. You know what?
I mean, you don't have to.
Honestly,
right? You don't.
Kind
you're
of
done.
The same.
You did the person you're supposed to tell.
Yes. I would say that however you feel, you know? Maybe sometimes because friends have said to me like, oh, I didn't even came out to my parents. Like, they should know.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. That's funny.
Wow.
Like,
I don't know. It depends on your own experience. Mm-hmm. I came out to my brother and my sister, but they already knew. But the only person I came out to my mom, and then because of the show, I was like, I don't have to explain anything. They can watch the show.
They can.
Ya saben. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But to my family in Mexico, I never came out. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I just took my girlfriend one time to like a family event and was like, hey, what's up? Yeah, this is my girlfriend. This is Gloria. Say hi, right? My mom was like giving everyone the eye, like, I dare
don't
y'all to
fucking
say something.
Do shit, yeah.
She was like, I dare all of y'all. Like, her brothers and sisters, she was like, uh-huh, say it.
Amazing.
Say it, I'm waiting. I was like, ooh, okay.
But I think it's about a moment that you need to reach out where, like, you just don't give a fuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm there.
I'm not there.
I don't give a fuck.
There's no way in hell I'm, like, yeah, that I can tell my Mexican family right now. Like,
I can give a fuck them.
Mexican-American? Mexican-American family?
They're bigots. They can also just fall off a mountain. They're white passing. And they're, you know which ones I'm talking about. They're real
fiestas. I like my Mexican family. I care about what they think about me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Well, they really love you.
It's a good test. It's not like I think that they're going to be like, fuck you. You know, I don't think that they'll necessarily do that.
Also, another thing, like, in my case, it's just like sometimes I get frustrated because I feel like, why do I have to do all the work?
Yeah, they need to come
just
to
finish talking,
but you
about
know
this.
They're not gonna do that.
They're not.
They're not gonna come to you and be like, it's okay.
And sometimes I'm like, okay, they belong to another generation.
You don't
another
talk about
country.
It. The
honestly.
Thing with the older generation is they don't care as long as you don't talk about it. That's what I'm finding. Like, I took my girlfriend. I didn't say she's my girlfriend. I was like, I don't owe y'all that explanation. Mm-hmm. She's a person. This is her name. Y'all can fucking take it from there. I'm like, no. I'm like, she's a human. She's her own human. I'm just going to call her by her name. I love that movie.
You're right, though. They definitely... Even after I told my mom, she doesn't talk about it. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a thing we talk about, but they know.
Same
you
thing
know
with
what
my
I mean?
Mom. I feel like it's been a process. And the way I measure or I see how the process has been growing or advancing, it's my birthdays. So my birthday celebrations, my mom was always like, oh my God, I'm going to make barbacoa because she's an excellent cook.
Oh, yeah. You put that in the show.
Yes. So she was always like, you should invite your friends. But because I was in the closet, it was painful to me. I was like, I don't want a party. I don't want a carne asada, barbacoa, nothing. Mm-hmm. So I used to invite my friends. I used to tell them, like, oh, my mom doesn't know I'm gay. So I felt like I was betraying my friends because one day, one of my friends even asked me, so, like, should I play straight? And I felt so guilty about it because I didn't answer that. But my answer was, like, you should. And I shouldn't have done that, right? So I always feel like this kind of guilty and conflict because I had like my friends who are my real friends and then I have my mom and I didn't want to hurt my friends or my mom, but I didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. So then eventually I came out to my mom, and I came out in November, I believe, and my birthday is September. So she had like almost a year. We never talk about it again. Mm-hmm. And then my birthday was coming, and she's like, oh my God, your birthday is coming. And I told her, I don't want anything. And she said, why? And I said, because I told you something almost a year ago that I was gay, and just to let you know, like, all of my birthdays are painful because I never invite any of my friends. Mm. So if you really want a birthday celebration at home, I'm gonna invite everyone else and I'm gonna be myself. So there was a big silence. She didn't respond. Mm-hmm. And then at the end she said, okay, let's do the party and everything. So I invite everyone, but she was very quiet through the whole celebration. So for me, it was a little sad, but that's the whole process that we gotta go through. And sometimes I get frustrated at that. Like, why do I have to?
You give it years. My mom, it took her a lot of years to get to where she's at. Just keep going.
This last birthday, I invited some of my friends because I was really busy with work, so I didn't make a huge party as usual. I invited a few friends, and next day my friend texts me. He's like, oh my God, your mom has changed so much. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why? She's like, she remembering my name, and she remembers everyone's name, and she gave me a request to go. And then I didn't realize that she, in fact, has changed a lot. Mm-hmm. One thing that I always struggle with is that she never remembered any of my gay friends' names. Mm-hmm. Never. Mm-hmm. And one day I got an argument with her, and I told her, like, I went out with this friend, and she's like, who? And I said, I'm not going to tell you his name because he's gay and you don't like to remember my gay.
So you're calling her out, and she's slowly learning every time you call her out.
So I said that because, like, I was tired that she never, I didn't know if it was on purpose. I don't know what the reason was, but I did notice that. And this time, my friend made me realize that she remembers everyone now. Mm.
Wow.
So I'm like, oh, wow, it's a big step. And then the next day she also was asking me, oh my God, did you have fun? How was it? Did you enjoy your party? So I did realize that there has been a lot of progress.
Look at your mom. She's growing.
Yes.
You, like,
that's great. I like that you have that marker. You know what I mean? Like, your birthday, like, that celebration is your marker, because a lot of people can't gauge it. I can't fucking gauge it for the life of me. I have no idea. But that's really beautiful.
Even my friends mentioned it, because last year, actually, they brought a DJ, and my friends started dancing, perreando, and all the gays, and it looked like, they said, like, oh, it was Paramount Pride, because I live in
Paramount.
Wow. it was like a little Paramount Pride.
That's cute.
That's so amazing. Yeah, and your mom there?
My mom was there.
Shout out to your mom.
So, yeah, so I'm excited for all the progress. It's just like that frustration that we had to go through sometimes.
Of course.
But shout out to all the people who are going through the same process right now.
It's just time. Takes time. Yeah.
It takes time, exactly. It
took my mom like 7 years, but she's good now.
That's cool.
Yeah,
so let's get into some other parts of your childhood. Like, what I know you mentioned earlier to me, but you didn't necessarily know that you wanted to be a filmmaker.
But you enjoyed movies.
But you definitely are now.
Yes. I always knew what my passion was, but I just didn't know I could pursue filmmaking. You know, one thing that I realized, the first one I think that I had a huge impact on me, because I grew up in Acapulco, and in the 90s they had a big music festival called Festival Acapulco, where all the music artists go to the beach, and they had a stage and they sing. So my family took me to this festival, and I saw the celebrities for the first time, but I realized that all the singers and actors and actresses were white. But they were the actors, they were the cast who were playing in the soap operas and las telenovelas. So, and telenovelas are well known because they portray poor people. The la pobre, que se casa con el rico.
Always.
You know? He owns a rancho.
So, in my mind, I was like, wait, they're poor in the novelas, but we don't look like them. They don't look like us. So, in my mind, I started realizing that celebrities were white, light skin, blonde, blue eyes.
So you recognize colorism when you're growing up.
And I felt so sad because I was like 89 years. And I saw all of the people, all the audience, like asking them for autographs. and pictures. And I was like, wait, why no one is in shock? Like, I am in shock. I was in shock.
Right.
And
they
I
didn't
was,
see
like,
it.
Confused because I saw everyone so happy asking them for autographs, but I was in shock because I didn't look like them. So since then, I started realizing that pretty people were light-skinned people, and bad, ugly people were like me, or the people who live in Acapulco, which is predominantly oscura or morena. And that's how I started realizing that I maybe not even considering that one day I could be a filmmaker, because all the people who
make
work
films
in the industry
mm-hmm.
were light-skinned. And when I was like, at the same time, since I was a kid, I started watching films from Mexican cinema. Maria Félix, Pedro Infante.
Do you have a favorite?
I like Dolores del Río, María Candelaria. She's such a beautiful film. You have to watch it.
Mm. I must. I've been slacking on that. God, that's so interesting. Like, I love that you had the connection, like, going back to this other stuff, but, like, the connection clicked so quickly in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it sucks, though. Like, it sucks to hear that, like, the media so directly forced, like, internalized racism or
yes.
colorism on
he
yourself.
His own
like, it's so freaking
yeah.
trash. You know what I mean?
And I know there was something, like, at the same time, I was already loving films, because I was watching all these Mexican films from the 50s. When I was, like, around 12, 13, I started working out at a Walmart, the first Walmart in Acapulco, like,
mm-hmm.
packing the bags for the tourists,
mm-hmm.
and then they give you, like, a tip.
Yeah.
They give you, like, 1 cent, 2 cents, 1 pesos.
Mm-hmm.
And at the Walmart, there were, like, movie magazines.
Mm.
And I started, like, I remember my first movie magazine, it was on the stand, and there was Meg Ryan on the cover. And I opened the magazine, and I started reading it, but at that time, I was already in love with films.
Mm.
But with that magazine, I started reading about Hollywood.
Mm.
And then I remember with the money that I earned in Walmart, I bought a film book with the history of films.
Wow.
And then when I was 16, 17, I used to skip school classes, no, en las mañanas, en la matinée.
Mm-hmm.
I go to school and I used to go by myself to the film, to the movies to
wow.
watch. To watch all type of films, even like para adultos, like
mm-hmm.
compraba un ticket para la de los niños y ya adentro me metía
the wrong theater.
Watch all the films at the movie theater in Acapulco when
mm-hmm.
I was like 16, 17. So I feel like I always knew how films were my passion, but in my mind, I didn't know that I could be a filmmaker, because that was only for either rich people or pretty people, and I was not part of the like the pretty people in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, I came to the United States, and when I came, I already knew that I was going to spend the rest of my life working in the restaurant industry.
Mm-hmm.
And it was until I met these undocumented youth people who had so much connections with, or we had the same struggles, that I learned that many of them were going to universities, college, and they were like breaking so many walls in society, that I was like, oh my God, maybe I can go to college, maybe I can like take a film major. And after a long journey, I got enrolled in college. And I remember people were asking me, what are you going to go to college for? And I said, film.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those friends, there was a big silence when I used to tell them film. Because
they expect you to do
yes,
this. It's the same thing that all like
yes.
immigrant parents kind of expect
yeah,
of their kids,
doctor
too.
Doctor or
the
lawyer.
Way I interpreted
mm-hmm.
that was like, why would you choose film? Like, you waited so many years to go to college, and you're going to choose film when you can be a doctor or a lawyer or something. Like, and there was that silence, but I'm glad that I've been able to prove my family mostly that I've been like challenging all of these things that society tells us that we can accomplish.
Definitely.
Mm. And that kind of leads into the next thing I wanted to cover as well, is your web series. I mean, all of this led to you making a web series, and here we are. And it's honestly, I've loved it. I binged it, and I was like, oh, he's putting so many things in here that, like, I'm like, yes, only if you work in a restaurant. Like, that's it.
Take us through it, because I mean,
yeah.
I, from what you've told us, like, it really, really reflects your life, like, very closely.
It does. Is it autobiographical?
like 70-80%.
70-80%.
Maybe a little bit more of that. some of the experiences, issues that I put on the series, I have witnessed or heard of it.
Okay.
And I just connected when I write the scripts and everything. Like, there is one scene when my character, his boyfriend is breaking up with him on season one.
Yeah.
And I wanted to put, like, some of the reasons that usually relationships do not work out when someone is undocumented.
Mm-hmm.
And that did happen to one of my friends, that someone who didn't understand the struggles broke up with him and told him, like, I broke up with you because you don't have papers and because it's so stressing for me.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, how is the assimilation? Because on the scene, we see that my character speaks Spanish.
And
he's
speaking English.
Yep, speaking English. And they just, that's how they communicate to each other. And
that's how they communicate. But in the scene, he says, like, we can never go out. Like, you don't have an ID. You cannot travel. You cannot do this. You're always complaining. And he says, like, oh, siento que estás amargando. And that, someone did tell me that. Like, estás amargando, because he didn't understand that so many things that I just couldn't do, even in social life, which affects a lot, because you want to have a normal life like everyone else, right? And I feel like relationships are part of that. And what I didn't know is that when I premiered that clip, we premiered on social media, many of the community started sending messages, not only queer, but also like undocumented straight community, and they wanted to tell me their stories. They wanted to tell me, like, oh my God, that happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, like, my boyfriend broke up with me because I never wanted to drive because I don't have a driver's license.
Wow.
Like, so many people wanted to talk about relationships. And I started, like, kind of like analyzing, like, why do they want to talk about this scene in a specific? Like, what is it? And then I realized that about undocumented issues, we have documentaries, we have articles.
You don't have rom-coms.
Exactly. we have never talked about relationships. We had never talked about love, about, like, how to take care of our heart. And I felt like that was my answer about why the community was connecting with that scene, which until now people just want to talk about that.
Wow.
Like, oh, we have a lot to heal.
I mean, there's a lot that you covered. There's my favorite part is when you guys can go by the go by the green card.
Yes.
I'm like, where did y'all find that actor, that guy who's selling the green card? Because he's so believable.
You know,
I feel like he's like my Theo or something. I was like, is that my dad? Like, what is this guy?
Oh my God, I'm glad that you.
He's so animated. I love him.
Yesterday, someone also, like, who saw the series for the first time, told me about that actor, the one who sells the green cards. That was my uncle. He unfortunately passed away.
Oh.
But he never acted. And when I was writing the script, in my mind, I wanted someone like him to play the character. And actually, in my mind, he was going to play it. But he was not an actor. He was a restaurant worker. He had never acted. So when I told him, I'm writing this, I'm actually creating a web series, and this is what I want to do, and I want to know if you want to act in it. And he said yes. But it was a whole process, because the first time that we did the rehearsals, he could barely speak. He was so nervous.
He was so nervous.
That's wild.
He's so natural, too.
Videos. I should do like a kind of like...
His growth. You know,
like a dedication video, right? Or something. That'd be really cute.
He was so nervous. He could barely speak. We did like a few rehearsals until like he got comfortable. And then also like me learning how to direct, because that's part of the director too, how to make someone feel comfortable. And because I really wanted him to be in front of camera as he was off camera.
Oh, so is that who he is?
Oh my gosh. Yes,
he was so amazing.
He was excited. He was always making you laugh. So when he did his research, he's like, oh, I heard like when they saw the green card, they have like a little notebook. And he had his little notebook.
I love
he
that.
He was so professional.
Wow.
He
could have
been
a fucking badass actor.
Yes, when we went to the park to shoot the scene, we did it like really quick because everyone was on spot. But he did an amazing job, and until now people like always ask me like about him, because he was so natural. I think he had a bright future.
He was amazing.
I was like, wow. And I love that, like, you didn't, like, it was scary, but it was hilarious. Yes. And I was just like, okay, you're somehow giving us, like, rom-com. You're giving us, like, well-written development arc of a story. And I was like, but you're, like, making it funny. And there's something that, like, you're, it's like a rom-com. It's like comedy. Like, a lot of it is very light. You know, and I love that.
Well,
and a lot of it is super heavy. Yes, at the very end.
On that scene, mm-hmm. I didn't want to make the Mika Bender as a villain.
And I had that in mind.
Mm-hmm. So I was like, how am I going to work this? First, I already had the actor, mm-hmm. but I had to work on the dialogue. Mm-hmm. I had to work on the dialogue because, and I wanted to put the energy on both sides at the same level. So I didn't want to make him a villain, and I wanted to make both parts, the ones who are buying the Mika and the one who's selling it, as our community just surviving.
No, and that's how it is. It really is like
glad,
that.
I'm glad that audiences are getting again that. Also because like our community is criminalized all the time, and I was like, well, if we are criminals, I'm gonna talk from my perspective and my own experience. Mm-hmm. And here, I feel like I am humanizing.
Oh, so much humanizing.
People, you know, who are just surviving. Are surviving.
The reality of it. Mm-hmm. And you even gave a couple of breakdowns in your later episodes where I think with the introduction of the fling, I call him a fling, he kind of gives your character a lot of like information and knowledge, and he's talking about like queer community, and I was just like, oh my god, is that how that really happened though? Like some dude had to come and he's like, look, let me tell you, did someone come into your life and give tell you that same thing?
I think yes. She wants to know if that character was based on someone in real life.
Which character?
El novio de, like the one
the
that had a...
He had a boyfriend.
He had a boyfriend and then you guys became boyfriends.
Yeah, they broke up and y'all got, like, he was leading your character on.
Yes, kind of like that, yes.
Kind of like a... I call him a fling.
I feel like, mm-hmm. I once was in a relationship that I was with someone who was... undocumented, and I was like, oh my god, we have so many things in common, and I started a relationship with, mm-hmm. and I felt like I have found the one because we connected and we know everything, especially because I was barely joining the undocumented mm-hmm. queer movement, mm-hmm. you know, and he was one of the first ones who felt like out and proud mm-hmm. and ashamed. So that is based on a real relationship.
And that's very attractive. That's super attractive when, like, you're in the closet or just now kind of coming into yourself. That kind of person can be super attractive. So
yes,
I understand
yes,
that.
I'm
ugh. No, I felt so seen within. And all your side characters, I love so much. I feel like they're even, like, developed. Like, you give each of them some time.
Is there someone that mm-hmm. in particular that you like?
Oh, my God. Who is the girl... towards the end.
Alejandra.
Yeah, I love her.
Alejandra.
She's amazing. She's like, yeah, so when, you know, you need to make movies, so when I'm, you know, you can remember me on famous and put me in your movies. And I was like,
you're going to make a movie about me?
Make a movie about her right now. I would watch it. She's amazing.
And those lines are based on true friendships. Mm-hmm. Many of the lines are from friends who had
real conversations.
Real
you're
conversations,
having.
Yes.
Those are the best ones.
That character Alejandra was based on an undocumented trans woman activist who was Zoraida Reyes, mm-hmm. who was tragically murdered in mm-hmm. Orange County. So I wanted to bring honor to Zoraida Reyes in the web series.
Oh, you did.
But I wanted to bring also like the mm-hmm. joy, you know, because mm-hmm. in media. Undocumented people are always crying, are always or crossing the border or getting deported. And for me was like, what is it that we do after we cross the border and before getting deported?
There's so much joy there.
You know, like we are mm-hmm. human beings. So on this series, I wanted to focus on undocumented people laughing, dancing, having sex, falling in love. Mm,
thank you.
Pursuing
yes.
happiness. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I feel like Hollywood would have never made. And I wanted to, and the best thing also that I love is that working like for more than 18 years as a server, in a scenes in mainstream media, you always see movies where like Tom Cruise or Leonardo DiCaprio go to a restaurant, they order a martini, and then the server comes, he draws a martini, and there's like 1 second of the server, and then you're like, oh, that's me, that's the server.
Representation.
Representation. Oh, and this is the first time that we get we just see sometimes, like, on those movies, we just see, like, the hand dropping out the
You're
martini.
You're like, that's me, I'm the hand.
And I'm like, that's the hand, that's my hand. And this time we get to see that server, what his
life.
Like.
You
life.
Know, and that's everything that? I always
I was gonna
ask
say,
for.
Like,
I'm Fred obsessed
Pepita
with that.
Always says, like, you know, like, that, you know, the freaking side character that was used to elevate this rich person, I want their story. And that's what the story that you're telling. And I think, like, what you were talking about earlier about how these white rich people didn't represent you, you know, the working class in Acapulco. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I love to see brown people at, you know, freaking being badasses and shit like that. But I want, you know, we want these down-to-earth stories. These down-to-earth stories are, they're beautiful. There's so much more essence in them than people give credit.
There's so much joy.
That's that was one of the focus of the series, because this time we get to see someone who's undocumented, who's a lead character, he's Mexican, he has an accent, he's 30 years old. So he doesn't fit into the, like, perfect immigrant character. He's messy, he makes mistakes, he says problematic shit. He's going to be more problematic in next episode.
Yeah.
But he's going to learn. One thing also that I want to focus on that is that he's not educated or he's not woke, and especially right now in the times that we're living. And that's something that I struggle a lot when I joined the movement, that even though all of my friends were undocumented, proud, unashamed, unapologetic, I always felt like kind of inferior because I didn't know anything what they were talking about. And everything I used to say was problematic. And for me, I feel like with my series, I want my audience to learn along with the character, the way he's gonna be learning.
And that's the way we see, you know, wokeness, you know, quote. Like, you should teach. And there's an episode where your character says something completely out of pocket.
Yes.
And one character goes, that's fine. You don't, you know, you don't punish people for what they don't know.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, word. Like, and, you know, I feel like you're giving us, you know, completely the opposite perspective of, like, everything that media tells us, including learning, you know, that learning, that wokeness. And that's so important, so crucial to the community, because people are so harsh. It makes, like, you can't even have, like, a conversation with someone unless you have a degree.
Yes.
And it's like, honey, you know, we're the same. Talk to us like we're the same. Like,
or in my case, I feel like I wanted to be part of the activist movement, but when I was in these spaces, I wanted to say something, but because I was so scared of people calling me out, because that's how I saw some of these spaces, people just calling out each other, I felt so inferior, like I didn't know anything. So now I get to get my voice through the series, and at least I hope that this can help our people to contribute and to get united more. Cause
be nicer to each other.
Yes, be nicer to each other, because sometimes, like,
they just talk shit on each other
sometimes
all day.
Unnecessary. Also, like, I remember I used to ask for friends. I asked friends, like, oh, what is this about? And I remember, I don't know if it's now the moda, because they used to answer, like, you can Google that shit. It's not my job.
Yeah, se pasó de moda. Yeah,
that's something that we say a lot. But now, in my perspective, I feel like there are moments when you can say it, and there are other moments when you cannot. Especially because, like, I felt like my community was fighting for the undocumented, the oppressed, but they were not letting the oppressed join the movement because they were not woke enough.
Mm-hmm.
So with this series, hopefully, I hope that we can create a conversation about the
like to call out culture. It just creates barriers for people, and it's the opposite of what they want. We want unification. So,
yes.
And your show definitely does that.
And we need more. Necesitamos estar más unidos en eso. I feel que eso es una de las cosas que nos divide un poquito, especialmente en el mundo activista and community organizing.
Yeah, like, don't keep people out. Don't create barriers, especially to people when you want on your side to help you to go march. You gotta go down. Not even go down. It's just be normal.
For my part, one of the things that I learned is to listen. Because, like, I've been learning a lot since I joined the movement about my privilege as a cisgender man. So I'm always listening, and acknowledging my privilege. And I'm like, until now, I'm like, well, I'm sure I have a lot more privileges that I don't know about that I keep learning. So I appreciate that from the movement.
That's so freaking refreshing to hear, because I feel like everybody's just out there calling out, oh, you have this privilege, you have that privilege, you're freaking white Latinx, you know what I mean? Like, they have a fucking lot of privilege, and I just hear it all the time, and I'm just like, let's call it our own privilege a little bit, huh? Let's talk about how we're able-bodied. Let's talk about how we are citizens of the United States sometimes, you know what I mean? Let's talk about these things that we have that instead of everybody else's shit, you know what I mean? Like, let's uplift each other instead. I don't know. Not to be that person, but
but yes, I'm so happy that you said that.
Mm-hmm. I'm so happy that you said that. That's fantastic. And I was going to ask, like, what is something that you can't wait to bring to your show, but you kind of told us right there.
The character is going to, because right now he's in the closet, he's kind of like learning, embracing himself. He's 30, right? In my mind, I have vision five seasons, and through every season, he's going to go through experiences that are going to make him realize that maybe to be in the closet or living scared, lying is not the right way to pursue liberation and freedom. So the same way he's going to learn, or he's going to embrace his identity, I hope that this can help any other audience members that are going through the same things that this character and me, myself, went through. So I definitely want the audience to learn about the character.
That's wonderful. That's great.
That's so powerful.
And so I'm curious, like, I know that you realized that you wanted to be a filmmaker, you know, later on, but did you also always know that you wanted to be a writer, or is that just kind of something that's a consequence of being a filmmaker?
I think that's the second part. Mm-hmm.
No, I know I love film. I know I love film since I was a kid, but I never thought about being a writer. For me, a writer sounds like a very fancy thing to do. And now that I realize, after enrolling into college, I realize that you have more resources here in this country than in Mexico, right?
Mm-hmm.
Going to college and seeing so many people doing so much stuff on YouTube and taking advantage of social media, I was like, well, I want to create. I felt always creative, or thinking about, like, oh, they should make a movie about this, they should make a movie about that, they should make a TV series about this. I was always thinking like that, but I never thought, oh, I'm the one who can make that happen.
When did that happen? Like, what did you watch a web series and go, you know what, I can do that shit?
It was the first time that I felt represented here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It was when I went to watch In the Heights, the musical.
Mm-hmm. Lin-Manuel Miranda.
But I remember one day, because this is why I feel like the universe is always like putting things for you in front of you. I turned on the TV and the Tonys were happening,
mm-hmm.
and Lin-Manuel Miranda was winning with the musical In the Heights, and they had a performance and at the awards, and it was about poor people living in Washington Heights. And I was like, I can't believe I'm watching, like, poor people, and they're talking about poor issues. And I was like, that is me. And they look so happy, and this joy that usually we don't see.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time that I saw myself represented living in the United States.
Mm.
And then a lot of time passed, and I remember when I watched, I was going through a really big depression after coming out.
Mm-hmm.
After I came out to my mother, she didn't accept it, and there were conversations when she was like, because she's very religious, there were conversations where she was like, oh, es que tú tienes cura, es que yo sé que si vas a la iglesia te vas a curar,
mm.
if you look for God, if you accept Jesus, you have a cure.
Like, it's a sickness,
so that
yeah.
That gave me like a big depression, because I was like, so I came out and nothing happened, and I feel like now it's even worse. So I fell into this big depression. And I started seeing therapy through college. I always tell people, because many people don't know that sometimes colleges and universities use offer therapy,
mm-hmm.
and that's very important. I started watching therapies, and at the same time that I was getting therapy, a friend, Julia Gutierrez, from Arizona, she said, hey, have you ever seen a poor black girl?
Oh my God, yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
I started watching the series, and that series brought me back to life. I was like, oh my God, this is so good.
I can do this too.
I can tell my own story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fun fact, everybody. Yes. Before Insecure, there was awkward black girl. Yes. Fun fact.
Hilarious. It was so fucking funny.
And I still watch those episodes.
That's why your stuff is so funny too. I knew it. I was like, but, you know, I know
it. I think it's about breaking all those stereotypes about the oppressed communities and bringing that joy. Mm-hmm. You know, in the Heights, awkward black girl has that. We're changing the narratives and we're bringing that joy that mainstream media doesn't want
to
show.
I don't know. We're all just supposed to be miserable and poor.
Mm-hmm. And I am, but I don't want to see it on TV.
Yes. Or if we're gonna bring it, we should talk about from our points of view.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
From only. Onwards, only.
Not definitely.
From people who do not know anything about experiences. So after that, I saw Viola Davis making history because she won the first African-American woman, the Best Actress Award.
Mm.
And during their speech, she said, you cannot win Emmys for roles that are simply not there.
Oh, my God.
And that, like, just hit me. Mm-hmm. And that night, I sat down in front of my computer and I wrote 8 pages, which was the first episode of a documentary, a web series about a Mexican server who lives in Los Angeles, who's lying to his family about his identity and is lying to society about his legal status. And that's how Undocumented Tales started.
That's beautiful. Black women are going to save us all. They're going to save America.
They've been saving America. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not saved yet.
No, I'm saying they've been saving. It could be worse.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about some of the first representations. Is there anything now, like as far as representation of yourself, other than your own tale, that you just consider like the best representation that you've ever seen of yourself?
Or something you just enjoy watching right now?
You know, it's, I've been thinking a lot about that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because I realized on one of the episodes where you were at Nothing's for Lunch, that I do not have a favorite queer movie. Right.
Mm.
So I was like, why don't I have a favorite queer movie? And then after thinking a lot, I realized that I connect more with poor people than queer people.
Right on.
So that's more important to your identity,
yes,
or just like a bigger factor of your identity.
Yes. Because I feel like we went through extreme poverty in Mexico with my family. I was working since I was 4 years old.
Mm.
So for me, it's like, how do you analyze and reflect on all of those traumatic experiences that didn't happen to everyone else, right? Because in my mind, I was like, oh, everyone had a childhood like the one that I had.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that's why every time I see poor people being happy on TV, on media, it's like, that's me. So I connected more with the really working class than with queer people, which I don't know why.
I understand.
Weird,
I know. No, it's not weird. It's
but
not.
I have an answer after.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the answer?
No, I mean,
well,
I have
you still don't...
to, like, why I'm
okay.
a favorite queer movie.
So what's your favorite working class
Yeah, do you have,
movie?
Like, a favorite, just favorite movie?
It's Nosotros los Pobres from Pedro Infante. It's actually two movies. It's Nosotros Pobres and Ustedes los Ricos.
Ustedes los Ricos.
And those names go together so well.
I mean, they're both Pedro, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you watched the movie?
I have not.
I've seen the Nosotros Pobres.
Yes,
like, when I was like 10 years old. It was so good.
Working class family in Mexico City, and they go through so much shit, but they have so much joy.
That's great.
So much joy. And I saw that movie so many times in Mexico when I was a kid, but until now, no hay algo más que les haya ganado. That's still my favorite.
That's still
movie.
It.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you have like a favorite filmmaker?
I like Pedro Almodóvar a lot.
Mm.
He doesn't talk about like a lot about poverty.
No.
Another one of my favorite movies is Cinema Paradiso.
The one you mentioned in your show.
Yes. Cinema Paradiso, which is about a kid who grew up poor with a single mom. And he always loved films since he was a kid. And he becomes a filmmaker.
Mm, wow.
But it's a beautiful film. It's a beautiful narrative. Everything about the film, it's beautiful. You have to watch it. Everyone that is.
Yeah. You know, one working class film that sort of comes to mind, and we talked a little bit about this before we got in the office, about Mosquita y Mari and Aurora Guerrero and how that's been sort of an influence in your life.
I love Mosquita y Mari, and I love Aurora Guerrero. I think she has been a great mentor to me, but to so many people that I know here in LA aspiring artists. And when I was starting the web series, I was casting people for the characters, and I couldn't find a mom. I was struggling so much to find a mom. And at that time, I sent a message to Aurora Guerrero through Facebook. And I was like, oh my gosh, she's not going to answer. She's not going to reply. She's so busy. She's so famous. And she did reply with actually not only advices, but also like suggestions of
people. That's beautiful.
And she was so nice and humble. And eventually, I feel like a year later, I met her through Julio Salgado. And she's so wise, and she has an energy that transmits, you know?
Absolutely.
That I wish all people were like her.
When we were blessed just a few weeks ago, she's most
amazing.
Wonderful woman.
Exactly. She's real. She's authentic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what seeps through. Yeah, she's just
authentic.
A real chick. She's a real person. She's a real human.
Exactly.
Ugh.
And for me, I feel like she has supported me a lot with my career, and because I have witnessed how she mentors and helps many others, so she inspired us to continue working with our work. Also, on season two last year, November 12th, something like that, we did the premiere, and I asked her if she could do the Q&A for the premiere, and she said yes. And she
interesting.
Yes.
That's
so
supportive.
So giving.
Supportive
That's
woman.
So giving.
So yes, and she's amazing, and I'm glad that I've been learning a lot from her. I don't think she knows everything that she means to many of us.
No, all three of us in this room. Yeah.
it's this podcast mission to make her know.
Yeah, I've been
what
standing
she
her
has been
since
doing.
Like 2011. Like,
mm-hmm. Very first episode.
Her.
Like,
that's the very first episode. It's the very first thing I covered. Mm-hmm. I was like, no, because that's the only time I've seen poor brown, indigenous looking women talking about pan dulce. And I was like, I want that shit forever. Because, like, once I saw that, I was like, they're not even rich. Like, look at the way their house is. They have doilies everywhere, and the, like, the way the sala was set up, the house. Like, all those things are just so important to me, too, because being poor and being brown are just as important to me. Because if I don't see them together, if I just see a rich Latina, that doesn't gauge with me at all. I don't see myself in that. That's why I've only seen myself in, like, a different world. Like, hood stories of them going to college. And I'm like, same.
And I told her when I met her, I told her, like, when I saw Mosquita y Mari and I was watching Huntington Park, and I was like, what? Huntington Park in a movie?
Uh-huh.
And I was so amazed because of what I was watching. And I told her, like, oh my God, you brought so much joy to so many people because of Mosquita y Mari.
It's so beautiful.
It's a beautiful film. Uh-huh. But I think that any aspiring artist, filmmaker, writer should watch Aurora Guerrero's work.
Yeah, all of it.
Because she's a great artist and mentor.
Mm-hmm. And if you like want to be a better like filmmaker, like a more, I guess, conscientious filmmaker, and you listen to our interview with her, she just gives the best advice.
She gives you a blueprint of how to go into community that isn't yours and create space for both your work and their truth. Mm-hmm. So everyone go listen to that episode and get that information.
For sure. Well, let's talk just quickly about like anything that you're watching right now that you're impressed by, that is representative or anything like that.
Yeah, anything. Yeah.
What are my favorite shows? Chewing Gum.
Oh, I love Chewing Gum.
Chewing Gum.
So good.
They're writing the comedy.
Oh,
actors.
My God.
And you know, she's the creator of the show.
Creator and writer, yeah.
Creator and writer. Kayla Cole is just like,
mm-hmm.
Such a talent. I started watching it, and I didn't know she was a creator until like I finished watching season two, actually. I didn't even bother reading the credits. It was so bad.
No,
it's amazing. Yeah. And then she's also putting a spotlight on being poor in like the UK.
Exactly.
So I'm like, this is amazing.
And then you get to realize when I was watching Chewing Gum and I saw the neighborhood, I was like, oh my God, like there's white people poor.
In the UK, there's
and
white
then
people
you start
poor?
Realizing that, well, it must be different over there, right? Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorites. I'm also watching Insecure. I watched recently Wanderlust, which has nothing to do with queer people of color, but it's a really good show with Toni Collette.
Oh, Toni Collette.
Yes.
I watch anything with
interesting.
Her.
You know, they had an entire episode on a therapy session, and the episode is 1 hour long, and that's the entire scene. Such an interesting episode. But then again, I learned things, and what I learned from that is, like, there's no rules anymore to whatever.
Oh, fuck yeah.
you know, for TV series, movies, whatever you want to do, just break the rules, because when you go to school, they give you like
guidelines
to follow. Mm-hmm. But now, because we're breaking the rules, we're creating, that's the only way you can create new things. When I watched the show, I was like, who would have thought that they wouldn't want to include 1 hour episode or just one therapy session, which is really good.
Well,
what are your shows that you
that I like?
Yes, that I
ooh,
like.
I haven't been able to watch as much. Right now, weirdly enough, I was really into American Vandal, which got canceled recently.
Pretty good.
I've been watching Charmed.
It's hilarious.
It's so funny, yeah. I've been watching Charmed. That one also has a little controversy around it. But I don't know. It has like a vibe that I like about it. And I'll talk about that later. Or earlier. I don't know when I'm going to talk about this. We're releasing everything in a weird order. I've just been watching a lot of random shit. Like really anytime, like Sabrina, like I binge watch the whole thing and I have some problems with it, which I might have talked about already. We'll see.
I've been watching movies, of course. So we just saw Rafiki and I'm like,
oh, Rafiki's,
Rafiki's like,
that episode should already be out.
Kenyan queer love story.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's still legal to be gay in Kenya. You can get killed for being queer in Kenya, and it's super religious, and I feel like they captured, and I got to see black people, black queer people, that queer folk be happy, have experienced joy, but still dealing with the reality that is in Kenya, that you can probably die.
Oh, wow.
So it's, we still got to see like a privileged point of view, but at least it was beautiful. It's beautifully shot. And I'm trying to think what other movies I've been watching. Mad Mary, Date for Mad Mary.
Date for Mad Mary. So also, it's an Irish film?
It's an Irish film, but it's true.
On Hulu.
You know, it's like a white girl telling a white girl story. I'm into that. I respect that. Sharp Objects, I just recently saw. I fucking love that.
It
felt
craziest
queer.
Ending.
It felt super
what
queer.
The shit.
Sharp Objects.
It
the Fox, Pose?
Oh, Pose? You haven't watched Pose?
Yes.
Oh my god.
We want the right person on the show so that we can talk about that.
Yes.
Because it's just, it's such an, there's so much to it, and I feel like we are not going to be able to grasp everything that we need to.
I feel like it'd be truer if we had like a queer woman of color, like a queer trans woman of color.
Either a trans woman of color or somebody just super in the drag scene, the ball scene, you know what I mean? I need somebody with some expertise. You know?
We love Pose.
It's
like,
wonderful.
Other than One Day at a Time, that is like the show that's brought me so much queer joy. And I watch it and I'm just like, I just want to see my people be happy. Like, I'm tired of pain. And Pose is amazing.
One Day at a Time. That's
our obsession. We are obsessed with that.
We love it.
I can't wait
for the third season. January's coming. In fact, it might already be here. I don't know when I'm posting this episode.
Yeah,
but
Rita Moreno.
Rita Moreno's a sweetheart.
Oh my god. She's a fucking legend.
Also supportive. Like, just, it's lovely.
I can't.
But Zylo is so real. I feel like audiences can learn a lot from that.
It's a very educational type of series.
Exactly.
Kind of like your series.
Entertaining, educational, like, and how they put, like, all these three generations, you know.
The matriarch.
I love that show. I love it a lot.
It's something to watch with your family members, because a couple of our friends saw it with their mothers. Me and my mother, I think we did, like, a lot of healing to the first season together, like, especially with her coming out story in One Day at a Time. So we like binge watched it and got drunk together and just, it was very healing. Like, I recommend everyone watch it with their mothers and see how they react. So, and take it from there, because it's,
and you know, talking about healing, that's how, for me, writing has been like a therapy because of the traumatic experiences that
of
we
course.
Go through as undocumented and being in the closet. And then I realized that putting those words on the screen are healing.
You let it out. It's like you like almost physically let it out.
Yeah, it's like magic. It's hard to explain.
You know,
writing
what finding, you know what I find out about writers is that like a lot of writers, people that are creatives, they're creative and they have to do this, because I feel like most creatives are like repressed emotionally, like all of them, all creatives are like repressed.
Just at me.
And like, you know, the more repressed they are, the more they have to find the need to express themselves without directly saying it.
We need word vomit,
or if we word vomit, or you know, filmmakers, were you, do you ever feel like you were like super, you of course you were repressed
emotionally?
I feel like there's a lot that I want to tell with Undocumented Tales. And I felt like when I wrote the first two episodes, I was telling a lot that I wanted the world to know. So when I premiered the episodes, and then something I wasn't expecting is that people were going to send messages and say, hey, I'm undocumented, that happened to me, or that scene, and they wanted to talk about different scenes that had affected them. And I learned that it was also like, I learned the meaning of representation, which is like telling people that your life is important, especially like living as undocumented in this country. I feel like this country, this society takes the humanity from you, because allegedly we break the law, we live with this feeling of guilt. We feel like we don't belong. We feel like we don't deserve anything, and we feel we don't deserve anything, not even our humanity. So with me, with this show, I feel like with this show, it's like I want to tell my people, don't feel guilty, and you have the right to pursue happiness. You have the right to exist, and we do deserve everything.
You do? Absolutely.
Word, I'm snapping. That's, that was beautiful.
It has been like a lot healing, and I hope that this can help audiences. Like, my character, he's 30, and he feels bad because he's running out of time. And he's like, I'm fucking 30, and I'm barely getting my GD, and that's something that happened
that's,
to me. You know, all of my 20s, I felt like very depressed because I was like, all of my work, my friends who do not know I'm undocumented, like, laugh at me because, like, I don't go to school, and they tell me, like, you should go to school, and they don't know I'm undocumented. So I always felt like I was running out of time on top of that. And then I was, once I was 30 and I was completing my GED, I felt like, oh my God, this is so embarrassing. I'm barely getting my GED because I felt like I was not embracing who I was and knowing that I didn't have the same opportunities as others, right? So with this show, I've been getting messages from people who said like, hey, I'm 37 and I'm barely getting my GED. And they're so excited to tell me through social media from other states or cities. So that's when they know they're feeling represented on the screen.
Oh, that's so real.
And that's like makes me feel like I need to continue doing what I'm doing.
Oh, no, you definitely do. Because you left us on. You can't leave us like that. Okay?
Definitely the series is bringing the humanity that this country wants to take.
No, yeah, but yeah, you can't leave me like that, okay? I need another season. I was like, wait, what? There's no more? Oh,
I know.
No.
I was like, what's the next episode? What's going on here?
No, it's too dramatic. Like, I was like triggered. It was dramatic. And I was like, wait, we was giggling and laughing on the rooftop last episode. Okay, I remember you were having champagne. You were going to school. And now what?
You know, it's that scene was beautiful. Because actually, the rooftop scene was the last scene of the entire production.
Wow.
So my friend who let us shoot at her loft, as a surprise, she bought champagne bottles.
Wow.
And then when we finished, she brought the champagne bottles and we opened them and we got drunk at the end. And we were just on the rooftop talking the small production team.
Oh, that's
and
so
then
sweet.
We were just like sharing experiences and how great we felt for finishing the shooting without money, because there were days where we shoot up to like 18 hours.
Wow.
The first 2 weekends that we shoot, it was Saturday and Sunday. With the first day, we shot for 16 hours, Saturday and Sunday for 18 hours. It was like in between like 6 hours. And it was so exhausting. The first weekend, we shoot all of the apartment scenes with the boyfriend lives.
Gotcha.
The body scenes, when we meet together, when we sleep together, when we wake up.
When y'all broke up.
He has a boyfriend. Like, all of the scenes of the apartment were shot on the first. The makeout scene in the bathroom.
You're like, hi, nice to meet you. Want to make out?
It's been an hour.
Yes,
it's
exactly.
We got to start making out now.
Movie magic is real.
Right? Actually, that scene I told Irving Pineda, the actor, shout out to Irving Pineda. I told him, like, you know what? I don't know how to feel about the main character scene, so let's just get out of the way.
Done
with this.
Wow.
And we planned the first weekend to shoot the main character scene. Because for me, it was like, I know I'm the director, but this is embarrassing.
Yeah,
of course.
So and it was hard for me to shoot that scene. It was hard. But now I'm like ready to do
it. You're like, okay, I'm here. Me quito la camisa.
Because the next episodes, Fernando, my character, now he's gonna embrace more his identity.
Mm-hmm.
He's gonna go on Grindr, casual days,
wow.
Music. So he's gonna be like more open, you know, to explore his sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna see a lot more of that. Especially because, like, you know, como son los jotos, los queers, when
mm-hmm.
people, they're like asking me, like, we wanna see more sex.
Los jotequis.
They're asking me, but mm-hmm. I was already planning because on his journey, he's. He's about
that's
to
a part play. Of it.
And now he's single, so
well, yeah,
he's
ready
be
to
out here. His other friend already thought, but not him.
Wow.
He's not being a thought yet.
Jeez. Well, you know what? I'm so glad that we got to talk about all this stuff. I want to tell our listeners where they can find
yes.
you and support you, so that we can just see what's coming next, because it sounds really amazing.
Well, they can watch all of you who are listening. You can watch all of the episodes on our YouTube channel, which is Undocumented Tales. Or go to the website undocumentedtales.com, and we have Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Undocumented Tales, the same name.
Okay.
So they can watch everything that we're doing. And also for auditions, we're going to be posting everything on social media. So
get in line, guys.
Which,
LA.
Yes, because she's going to be probably around this time.
Y'all need extras? I'll be sitting in the background. I'll eat a sandwich. I got you.
Yeah. that's great. That's great. Okay, so everybody go subscribe immediately. You don't want to miss this. And Armando, I know you also have some personal accounts. Do you want to
yeah.
share those too?
Yes. Armando Ibanez, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Instagram, I'm el peor del mundo.
El mejor del mundo.
Yes,
And we'll link everything that we can on cabronasychingonas.com,
yes.
as well as, you know, sharing beautiful pictures that we're about to take on our Instagram at CYC Podcast, our Twitter at CYC Podcast, facebook.com/CYC Pod. Is that everything?
Yeah, I make right. sure to subscribe to Patreon. That is.
Oh, we also have a Patreon.
Give us money.
And of
yes.
course,
use it for the right things.
And once again, thank you so much for being on the show. This
you.
Is a
thank
long time
you.
Coming.
I'm excited.
You should tell me what's going to happen next season.
Now that
turn
we're going
these microphones
off.
Off. We're going to turn these
nine
microphones
more episodes.
Off.
Wow.
Nine more
episodes.
Good, because this last season.
Ooh, and if you're rich and you want to fund him, also DM him.
Give him some money.
We're going to start a campaign to collect funds.
Okay.
So
we'll share that too.
Stay tuned, everyone.
Yes.
So you can donate.
Yes, I will donate.
Let's crowdfund.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much for listening, my listeners, the loves of my life, the only people that I have any feelings for.
Wow. She's lying, guys. She doesn't have any feelings, period.
Oh, my God.
And she has none.
Rate us 5 stars and leave us a review, because those are my favorite things in the world. Okay, bye.
Bye.